When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Far back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right, and the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 106. Mick Monagle here with you on The Fan. Obviously, you just heard the comments from Pete Alonso on the update. We've been focused on that. Yes, the Mets won the game. I don't want to dismiss the win. Huge win. Huge win. Huge performance from Anaya. The third Met behind Doc and Tom Seaver to have two consecutive starts of seven innings or more scoreless with 10 strikeouts. He's been dominant in his last two outings. A huge win secures the tiebreaker against the Cardinals and keeps pace with the scorching hot Arizona Diamondbacks, who won again, and Jock Peterson hit another massive home run for them. So you got to do that big win. Offense came through, Bader with a big hit, and then Taylor, who was moved into the two spot as everybody else has moved down, including Pete Alonso, moved down to fifth for the first time since 2020. He gets the big hit. Taylor gets the big hit. They score six runs. Another home run for McNeil, who, although Glaber has played well, is making me out to be an idiot for saying I'd rather have Glaber Torres than Jeff McNeil the rest of the way, which is always fun. But we've been focused on Pete Alonso and his comments at the start of the game yesterday in the pregame, justifying his bad season, talking about being an all-star, talking about on pace for around 40 home runs. I already got a tweet saying, well, he did say around. Well, you know, 32 is around 30, not around 40. Sorry. And we've been talking about his numbers. As some, you know, EJ just called me up and was, you know, trying to justify his numbers. And here's some further ones just to prove. Now, by the way, Pete Alonso, for his career, has not, and I've been saying this over and over again, Pete Alonso, for his career, has not been a bad clutch hitter. His rookie year, I feel like I remember a ton of big hits. I remember having a discussion about Judge's rookie season and his rookie season and saying, while I view Judge to be the better player and, you know, the more, you know, dynamic hitter, I felt like Pete Alonso's rookie year had a bunch of clutch hits. Pete Alonso's been a clutch player. This year he has not been. And trying to say he has been is just flat out untrue.
I actually remember an overnight host being adamant last year around the trade deadline, mm-hmm. this past offseason, earlier this year, that the Mets should not trade Pete Alonso. They should absolutely extend Pete Alonso, and he cited all of those clutch stats for the first 5 years of his career.
That is true. Who was such a handsome, clever overnight host?
Sal Licata.
Yes. It was me. I don't want to. I still hope Pete is a part of this team, but let's just acknowledge what happened. What he said, how it's clearly weighing on him, how poor those comments were, and we're going to get into it because I think a caller wants to say it, and I'll let him bring it up a little bit, but his teammates can't be happy with the idea of, hey, what are you struggling with? Hey, listen, I'm an all-star, when we all know he shouldn't have been. But here, further numbers. In high, the Baseball Reference breaks it down to high leverage, medium leverage, and low leverage at-bats. In low leverage at-bats, he's had 175 at-bats. He's hitting .274 with a .929 OPS. That's in low leverage. Medium leverage, he's got 170 at-bats. He's hitting .224 with an OPS of .658. And in high leverage, he's hitting .203 with an OPS actually of higher of .760. So his batting average goes down at every level of leverage. Low leverage, .274. Medium leverage, .224. High leverage, .203. Now, that's only 79 at-bats. But that's what we're talking about. That's the kind of year Pete Alonso is having. You can't run from it. You can't hide from it. And if you think that I'm just being a silly, know-nothing, you know, Yankee fan trying to talk on the Mets, I understand your point. No, but I'm just saying, I watch every game as well. And I root for the Mets, believe it or not. And what I'm telling you from what I've seen, I don't think it's crazy to say that Pete Alonso has been the sixth, seventh, or even eighth most important offensive player on this team during the run that got them back into the mix and saved their season. J.D. Martinez has had a terrible last few weeks. He was incredibly impactful in getting back into the swing of things for this team. Nimmo has cooled off over the last 2 weeks since the All-Star break. He was incredibly impactful during this stretch that brought them back. Iglesias has played a little bit less with the coming back of with Jeff McNeil getting hot again. He was incredibly impactful getting back into the playoff picture. Vientos, incredibly impactful. Bader, big hits all over the place. Like, it's not crazy to say that. Or who's the better overall player? Who do I want on my team next year? Yeah, all right. Why not? Well, that's a different conversation. Who's been the most impactful offensive players for this team? Pete Alonso is far too down the list for the benefit of the Mets because he needs to be that guy.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Jeff. And for what, are you at a concert or something, good. Jeff? What's going on?
I'm at the casino. It's one of the Coconut Creek Casino. I'm just walking out now.
Oh, walk out of that casino. Yeah. Get away from the blackjack table. Let me do you a favor and come talk to me about Pete Alonso.
Yeah, I'm actually walking right out by they have a NYY steak casino.
Oh, I got you.
I don't really put stock in these comments. He probably is talking to Boris more than he should be, to be honest. If he hits 3 or 4 home runs a series in Coors Field, this will be forgotten. And, you know, I said if...
Agreed.
He's on some level, agreed. He's not one of their top important players at this moment, but for them to be... to make a run and to do anything, any kind of damage, he's going to need to be. So
yep.
You're not... and there's no point to worry about next season. The same reason, the difference is the Yankees have with Soto is that, you know, this is their only year with him, and he's obvious. Soto's a, you know, top hitter in the majors, and
right.
Alonso's a nice power anywhere near right. comparable.
No, I love totally. They're not the same kind of hitter. Totally agree.
No. But, I said there was a big win yesterday after the disappointing loss to the Angels in that series, and
yep.
They could take 2 out of 3 against Colorado and Seattle. What will help them? And it's really going to come down to the big series, at least for this month. There's a series
at the end
Arizona
of the month.
And San Diego.
Yep. I mean,
yep. Arizona. Yep.
Yeah. You got it, Jeff. Thank you for the call, man. I appreciate it. You're 100% right. Those are the big series of this year, this month. The 4-game set against San Diego, and then the 3-game set against Arizona. That's, but in the meantime, you play some teams you should be beating, and you have to beat them. You can't lose 2 out of 3 of the Angels. They bounce back. They win a game against St. Louis comfortably. Great pitching. They need to keep that up. And the offense needs to continue to hit with run and scoring position, which they did yesterday, or at least, enough to score 6 runs. But, listen, of course. And, EJ said, well, that's the problem with sports radio. Things change from day to day. I'm on every day. Should I not tell you how I feel now because it's subject to change within a week? Of course, that's how life works. If Pete Alonso goes on a tear and hits 10 home runs in the next 14 games, yeah, we all have a different opinion. That's how it works. I'm not putting any declarative statements out there that Pete Alonso can't hit and ever again and needs to be gone, and those comments put an end to his Met career. I'm not saying that at all. The comments were made. They were bad comments. They were selfish comments. They were comments, as EJ said, and other callers said, it feels like it came from his agent. It feels like it is free agent Pete talking, as opposed to first baseman of a team trying to make a playoff spot. That's what it felt like. And I'm not saying he's too good for that, or that's a mistake someone can't make. No, it's a mistake, and it's been made before. But own it. Just because someone else told him to say it does not eliminate his responsibility for it. Because I don't know how his teammates are going to take the idea of what's with your struggles. I'm no struggles. You're talking to Pete Alonso, right? What do you mean struggles? Who you want me to go find JD for you? Because I don't have any struggles. I'm an all-star. I'm going to hit damn near 40 home runs this year. I don't know what you're talking about. Give him the Cashman line. I'm going to have to get you drug tested. Because I don't know what you're talking about. Struggles. Not me, not Pete Alonso. I mean, that's what it sounded like. It sounded like, no, I'm having a great year. I'm proud of everything. It's been great. I'm on pace for damn near 40. I'm an all-star this year. I mean, what do you want from me? I feel like there's a great opportunity to go make money and maybe win some ball games at the end of the year. Not great comments. Nick in God's country of Franklin Square. What's up, Nick?
C-Mac, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, buddy?
Very good. Okay, so I agree with you 100%. Was his comments off? Yes, they were off. Is Pete Alonso having a down year? Absolutely, he's having a down year.
Yep.
But how you said he's losing the love of Mets fans?
Yeah.
I don't feel like that. I don't feel like that at all.
Okay.
I feel like, listen, the Mets fans. Listen, they watch him every day. They know what they see. He's not. He's producing as he did in years past. But listen, if he goes on a tear right now, this is all forgettable.
Yep. Oh no, I agree. Listen, it's all, but it's still there right now, and I'm feeling like this conversation or what was slipped out and how he treated that comment makes me wonder.
But listen to me.
If it's weighing on him to the point where he's going to really struggle
now,
having that.
Now, has Pete ever had comments like this in the past? That's why I agree. Yeah. That's why I agree that it didn't come from him. This got to be Boris. He's never made comments like this in the past. And this
they're not like derogatory comments towards anybody. They're just comments defending himself. There, he's never struggled like this before for an entire season. He's never been put in this position where, like I said, he's looking at a lineup that everybody's better than him. Over the last, like, he's never been in this spot before. And I don't care if, again, you make it sound like that's okay that Boris gave him the comments.
No, not at all.
He's excluded from responsibility because they're from someone else.
I just feel like listen, these are the questions that's going to be asked of you, and this is how I want you to answer the questions.
I understand.
I really don't feel like that's how Pete truly, honestly feels.
Yeah,
more point.
Yeah, you don't think he feels like, hey, I'm having a decent year, I'm an all-star, and I've almost hit 40 home runs? You think he's lying when he says that?
No, C-Mac, the guy knows that he's having a down year. Yeah, come on. Years in the past, yeah. He knows how he... Listen, one more point for you, I'm very happy that you said it before. Now, who would you rather have on your team? McNeil or Gleyber Torres?
Yeah, Jeff McNeil's playing better. So right now, with the hot nature of Jeff McNeil and Gleyber Torres being benched, although he's hitting better. Jeff McNeil's been a better hitter. He has 1,000 OPS. He's completely played great over the last few weeks. So I guess I'd have to take Jeff. I'd have to take Jeff McNeil. I would have been wrong to say Gleyber Torres over these 2 weeks. We'll see how the rest of it plays out. I don't think that they're that far of different players, to be totally honest with you. I still don't. Jeff McNeil's hot right now. He was the same player that was miserable for a year and a half. But how could I argue who's playing better right at this moment? Jeff McNeil's playing clearly better than Gleyber Torres, who's being benched for not hustling. It's a tough time to be a Gleyber supporter. Actually, I went to the Yankee game on Saturday. I got to get another jersey. I'm not that big a jersey guy. I'm just not. I've never really been out there to try and, you know, have a million stuff. I have some T-shirts and stuff. But when I go to the games, I wear the jersey. And I really only have one. I have my 2009 Mark Teixeira jersey. But that's number 25. So that's all right. I went and supported him. The night after he got benched, I was at Yankee Stadium with a Gleyber Torres jersey. Philip in Jamaica. What's up, Phil?
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for making it.
By the way, before I get into my point with the comments, you're a great singer. You should take up another career in singing.
Thank you very much.
And you have a wonderful voice.
As I tell anybody who asks me about my singing, I would be the best Danny Zuko in a Grease performance on a Norwegian cruise ship that you've ever seen in your life. Your aunt Millie and Uncle Ted would come back from that matinee showing of Grease going, that Danny Zuko was chubby, but man, could he sing. I'm telling you right now.
Exactly.
That's right.
Really good singer.
Thank you.
But I want to go back to Mets comment.
Mm-hmm.
You said, I'm looking at it at a different angle. I agree with you 100%. And I'm very I'm sure it's from his agent, but if that was me, I would have said what I think was the best thing to say. You didn't have to listen to your agent. So my point is, if you're a teammate, especially if you're Lindor or Nemo, who deserve to be in the All-Star game, do you think it caused a rift between the teammates? Do you think they respect Alonzo as much? Do you think that Alonzo is going to lose respect for making the All-Star comments? Or do you think they'll just forget? Because you know the way Lindor, because don't forget, Lindor's the one who called the players-only meeting.
Yes. So
especially if you're Lindor.
No,
do you think they're going to lose respect?
No, I got you, and thank you for the call, Phil. I don't know if they've lost respect for him necessarily. I'm sure they understand the same thing. He's dealing with something. He's trying to justify his season. Like, it was selfish. It's bad. And yes, I'm sure it sticks in their craw a little bit, especially Lindor, that he should have been the All-Star as opposed to Pete Alonso, and to brag about being the All-Star when every, like, that's the other thing. It's oblivious. It's oblivious to the idea of what everybody believes. And I get it. I'm not saying, hey, I shouldn't have been an All-Star. That, no one's expecting those comments. You get acknowledged as an All-Star. I'm not saying he should give it back. But don't be bragging about it when nobody believes you should have been an All-Star. And you have to have felt that in some way, too. I mean, come on. You know you're having a down season. But did it cause a rift? I don't know. I think they're able to blow off these comments. I'm sure all it takes is a quick, man, I shouldn't have said that crap. I'm getting killed. You hear that fat guy in the middle of the morning killing me? I mean, he's an idiot, so who cares? But still, I probably shouldn't have said it. It's going to cause me a bunch of grief. Sorry, guys. I mean, I don't think it takes much. I don't think they're going to hate him for it. But I think, it depends. I don't know those inner workings in that relationship. There were some rumors last year that, Pete Alonso was at the center of some of the stuff going on with... the clubhouse issues and just the feeling around the team last year. I don't know how much validity there was to that story, but these comments were selfish. They were not team comments. They were not team-oriented comments. These were comments about him justifying his performance, bringing up his stats in All-Star games, and he's fine with what he's done. He's proud of what he's done. He's been struggling. And he has not contributed to this team in the way he needs to. And he didn't recognize that. It's not the end of the world. It's what I'm talking about today. Everything I've said, I'll stand on, I agree with. But sure, like the idea that, because a couple people now have said it to me. Like the idea that somehow I'll look foolish or that, it will be, in a week when he hits four home runs, you're going to feel like, I'm not going to feel like an idiot. This is how I feel right now with what's been going on right now. Hopefully this sparks him. Because he's going to get some controversy over it. Like, these comments, it's not going to just be me talking about it. Pat Boyle probably didn't hear my open. He's busy working, getting his updates together, doing other stuff. He came out and said the same thing. Contract year, played the comments, gave the tone, and ooh, those didn't come off good. Those comments, I'm not alone in the idea that those comments didn't come off good. He's going to get some flack. Maybe it wakes him up. I don't know. But for the first time, I'm not just thinking Pete's just having a down year. I'm thinking he's really allowing the situation to weigh on him. And that makes me more concerned. And the overarching point about it all is I'm concerned now that this offseason and impending free agency is weighing on him. And that's less likely to break out of this slump if it's just mechanical issues or lack of confidence or whatever. Like, that might just take, but if he's really weighing on the idea that his numbers aren't good enough, if he's clinging to the All-Star appearance, if he's clinging to the idea he's going to be around 40 home runs, then that's the kind of thing that just makes it more difficult to come out of a slump, and that's what they need him to do. Spencer in Westchester. What's up, Spence?
Hey, how you doing? So basically, I just canceled my Giants season tickets after 60 years of being in the family because I can't stand the training camp of Daniel Jones throwing the Little League neighbors. Neighbors looks incredible, but it's like we got to get Manning or Brady back in the pocket or something.
Okay, yeah, sure. I understand completely. I'm not even going to entertain it. I don't know, like. I'm going to get to the Giants in the 2 o'clock hour. I want to talk about the feistiness. If you're feeling after today as a Giant fan was I've had enough of this training camp, then you are in the minority. That is for sure. I mean, we are. I'm as pumped. I'm more excited about the Giants today than I've been all offseason. And I still don't know. We'll get into it. I don't want to do it right now. We'll get into it. I'm still not, you know, oh, here they come. Here, Super Bowl bound, because they, you know, manned up against the Lions. But just some of the feistiness and some of the comments you're hearing from the reporters and seeing what went on down at Giant Camp and the some odd eight different fights that took place, the quarterback getting in the mix. I mean, that now is not the time to cancel season tickets. Maybe for the first time in forever, there really feels like hopefully there's some sort of light at the end of the tunnel with a good head coach. I'm still concerned about the quarterback, but I'll give him this. He's got guts, man. I like Daniel Jones the person. I do. I just don't like Daniel Jones, the quarterback. I don't like Daniel Jones, the leader of my franchise, when he's this injury prone and he hasn't really thrown touchdown passes in his career. And I understand this is the best wide receiver he's ever had, clearly. No doubt. It's not even worth discussing. But, you know, there have been other quarterbacks who've thrown touchdown passes to lesser guys than this. That's all. But, hey, I'm not here to kill Daniel Jones today. Today is a Daniel Jones good day.
Annoy people on the quiet car and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 133. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. So, you know, every once in a while we do these 5-hour midnight rides. We like to do a little bit of movie talk, and I saw something just now during the break here as I went to Barstool Sports looking at different stories. One of the more unbelievable casting decisions I've ever seen in my life. This one's going to be great. Ben Affleck gets a lot of flack, for lack of a better term, and pardon the pun or hyperbole, whatever. I think Ben Affleck is pretty good. I like Ben Affleck and most of the stuff he's done. And he's, you know, Daredevil was awful. He's not, you know, he makes bad movies occasionally. They all do. But I like most of the stuff Ben Affleck has done. And I think he's a pretty good actor. But, you know, he's, for some reason, he's like one of those guys where he gets a lot of crap. Anyway, he is being cast as, get ready for this now. Ben Affleck is going to be Hulk Hogan. Ah. Now, it's in a movie about the Gawker case where, you know, he sued Gawker for publishing, I guess it was the video, right? It was a video of him having an affair with his friend Bubba the Love Sponge, who was a radio personality, having an affair with his wife. And, you know, there was lawsuits, and it's a very famous case, and it bankrupted Gawker. And it's a, I'm sure it's a very interesting story. There was a documentary on it, I think, in Netflix, whatever. But so it's about an aging, or, you know, he had to be in his 50s or 60s by that time, I guess. Hulk Hogan, 50s maybe, at least. So no, it's not like a wrestling movie where he's going to be playing Hulk Hogan wrestling. But still, Ben Affleck is going to play Hulk Hogan. That's just...
True story?
True story. It's about a blind daredevil who becomes a superhero. True story? No, it's a fiction type thing.
No, it's a fiction. It's a whole fiction deal.
You know what? I would not be my first choice.
When they talked movies, that was the best. I remember some of my favorite shows working with Mike were obviously the stuff when it wasn't about sports, the most memorable. I know it's amazing to me because I was there that day. The most referenced one, the most asked one I get when I tell people I work with Mike, besides, you know, how was he? You know, that's what everyone says. But I ran into a bunch of guys at the Yankee game on Saturday who were asking me about Mike, you know, recognized me, talking to me, asked me, I worked with Mike, oh, what was Mike like, blah, blah. Craig, what was Craig like? But people love the call about the Giants and the Giants picnic. It is, everybody loves that one. And I remember being here that day and definitely laughing and thought it was funny. But I had no real idea that that was going to be one of the most infamous moments on The Fan, really. I mean, Evan called it the greatest moment in WFAN history. And it's still the one I get asked about the most. I see the most Twitter. The most comes up every once in a while. People use it all the time. I don't know. That one really came. That one is like just beloved by everybody.
Someone even, like a big broadcaster, made a reference to it recently. I forget who, but it's definitely the most talked about question back. Because I also was here that day. I was out in the newsroom.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing about it was I watched, and I thought it was funny. I was laughing.
Yeah.
Minko was crying laughing. It was between updates. So, tears pouring out of his eyes. So that made it. But that's what made it special for me. I also didn't expect it would play. It has to be 10 years later.
I know.
The way, it is one of the most iconic moments in the history of Mike's show, in the history of the station.
I would have never have guessed that in the moment. Never in a million years. But people love that one. Lundqvist and Hugh Darvish are particularly close. It was very funny. It was funny, don't get me wrong. But
it definitely helped that Mike played it. Instead of just dismissing the guy, he played it up.
Correct.
Which you didn't always get with the prank call, so that made it. And I don't think that was a prank. I think we've talked about this. I think the guy was
genuine,
serious and
a
weirdo, but Mike playing it up the way he did definitely has added to why it's so well received.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But yeah, that was one of those moments where it was, in the moment, I thought it was funny, but I had no idea the reach that that phone call and that moment would have. People love that one. But, you know, like when he would talk movies, or, you know, Mike was big on the Oscars for a while. And then I think by the end of it, he was, you know, fed up with the political nature of it, if I remember correctly. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But I know he loved the Oscars for a while. We would talk Oscars. But I remember, for whatever reason, I remember loving the, there was like a week we were waiting for the new Pope. And just him every day mentioning it, talking about it. Then I remember, you know, white smoke came out, which meant they still weren't ready to make a decision. He's like, I think there's smoke coming out of the Vatican. Like, I just remember, I'm watching it right now. Smoke. Oh, it's white smoke. Okay. White smoke. Like, I just remember that kind of stuff. Like that. That would always be my favorite when we had something like that, especially like going on, like a legitimate story that was like part of culture, but not part of sports, that he was, you know, some of them are unfortunate, obviously. I know it has something to do with sports, but we did, you know, the Penn State story lasted forever. I mean, Kim Jones was on every day. I remember that being forever. I remember he was the one who told me Michael Jackson had died. That's right. I was in the newsroom, and I guess Eddie Erickson was producing for Mike. I think it was after Dog had left. I got to see what year.
It was 2 days after I graduated high school. It was 2009.
Okay. 2009. Okay. So Dog had already left. It was just Mike's show. And I guess someone called in to the control room and told Eddie that he works for TMZ, and they're about to go with a story that Michael Jackson's dead. And I just remember Mike coming out to the newsroom, you know, Michael Jackson's dead. They're like, what? He's like, yeah, he's got a call. TMZ, we got to check this out. Turn on the TVs. And we were waiting for the news to break that Michael Jackson had died. We had it like a little bit first, but Mike walked out to the newsroom. Michael Jackson's dead. Those are the things I end up remembering more than anything else. The funny moments that have nothing to do with sports.
Two of your more memorable moments, too. You were a big part of them. When I think of movies and Mike, the Rocky IV discussion and all the Rocky rankings.
Sure.
And one I vividly remember, because I was outside the building driving around looking for a parking spot. I was taken over after you guys, I guess Steve or Yant, whatever was on that night.
Right.
The Star Wars discussion.
Oh, yeah.
And how he just could not understand. What do you mean it starts with four?
I do remember that. What do you mean it starts with four?
And you guys are like Mike, we didn't decide. Like, George Lucas decided this.
That's right. I remember that.
He sounded so legitimately angry at you guys.
I know. He said, what are you talking about? It starts with four? Yeah, the first movies are 4, 5, and 6. Yeah.
Like, I remember clenching my legs on Washington and Greenwich and Spring Street looking for a parking spot, just making sure I could make it into the building, because I was laughing so hard during that.
I do remember that. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah, Mike had, and then the other one is when he had no idea who Stan Lee was. That one's made a lot of rounds.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Yeah. There was a couple of ones with Mike and movies and stuff. But yeah, those were always fun shows. Harambe the Gorilla. That was a story, obviously.
Well, also produced one of the all-time best drops.
Gorilla. Yeah. But that was people are crazy.
Well, Harambe was almost like with the Pope one. Like, these are the things that was, like, going on in pop culture at the time. Everybody right. in the world was paying attention to it,
yeah.
talking about it.
Yeah.
The one thing I wish we had Mike on, I don't remember him talking about it a lot that day, the escaped llamas at the, or wherever they were from,
right.
and the dress, is it black and blue or white and gold?
Yeah.
That was the same day online.
Was it?
I don't remember Mike going nuts about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't have any memories about that dress either.
It was mid-February. Maybe he was on vacation.
Yeah, we were all part of it. I mean, I remember in the newsroom, we were all looking at it and everything. I remember when that thing was going on, but I don't remember Mike having an opinion on that. But yeah, Mike talking about different things was always fun. But for some reason, the Pope one really sticks out at me. That was just because we were monitoring it day by day. And he would comment on it as he saw things happen he was watching the news while we were doing the show. And anytime something happened, oh, wait, oh, no, it's white smoke. all right, 143. But how about that? Ben Affleck to play Hulk Hogan. Amazing. I got to see that. I just to see what he's going to look like. I have to see how he's going to look like Hulk Hogan. I just saw Iron Claw. Now, did you see Iron Claw? We talked about this, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. To see what's his name transform, like a couple of different, and I guess now Zac Efron had a scare with a water incident, right? He almost drowned or something. I saw that story. But the guy from Bear and Shameless, I can't think of his name right now. Jeremy Allen White. You're on top of this stuff. Jeremy Allen White's transformation from that to Bear, like he's kind of becoming one of those actors who kind of changes physically.
Well, you know who he's playing in an upcoming movie?
I do not know.
Bruce Springsteen.
He's going to be Bruce in a Bruce bio. Wow. That should be good. That should be good. I just saw, I always forget, I always pronounce his name wrong. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Charlemagne? Why do I always say his name?
Chalamet. Big Yankee fan.
Is he a big Yankee fan? I know he's from New York, yeah. Chalamet is going to be Bob Dylan. I just saw the trailer for that new Bob Dylan bio where he would, and they've already made a couple of Bob Dylan ones, but
which Yankee game was it that you watched right after you watched Iron Claw for the first time?
Oh yeah. And I said,
you said it was more depressing than the movie.
That's, I don't even remember at this point. There was a couple of them. Probably one there at Clay blew the save. Undoubtedly. I think it was the, no, I don't think it was. I don't think it was the Baltimore game. I can't remember. I got to go back and look at my tweets. I don't tweet that often. I'll probably find it. 888-808-1019. But I'm trying to think of other, like, really just out there casting where you would have never guessed it.
Well, we had one. It got mentioned recently. We still don't know how it's going to turn out. Liam Neeson in The Naked Gun.
I know. That one sounds crazy, too. I'm looking forward to that. And I got to say, here's another thing I want to say, too. As I was watching, to me, I haven't seen the season finale yet. I'm behind on that. But for me, this has been a snooze fest of a House of Dragons series. I thought this season sucked. I was bored out of my mind. I remember watching every single recap before the next episode and said, that recap literally showed me everything I needed to know and in a more compelling way. I was like, I'm better off just watching the recaps. They were so long and drawn out. I loved season one. Loved it. Was super excited for season two. It felt like it took forever. I was like, when are they going to have another dragon? I was telling my wife, every time we're like, when is a show? What show should we watch? I'm like, well, when the hell is House of Dragons coming back? I was waiting for it. This season sucked. Now, I'll reserve judgment to finally say that until I see the finale, but I was so disappointed in this year. So boring. Just nothing going. I thought it was terrible. We'll see. I'll see how I feel about the season finale. But, what I was going to say was I saw, while I was watching all this, previews for something I previously poo-pooed and downplayed, but I have to admit it looks better than I thought. When I didn't like the most recent Batman movie, and I thought Colin Farrell as Penguin was terrible. Not just his performance was fine. but just the character of the Penguin. Like, I understand maybe it's the beginning of the Penguin before he becomes the Penguin, but the Penguin was a... Like, I know in the second Batman, Tim Burton's Batman Returns, he's a castaway who's been living in the sewer, and he's kind of a creature with fins and all that stuff. I know you don't have to go that far, but the Penguin is a character. He's the Penguin. He's got Penguin elements to him. This is just like a wannabe mobster who got passed over or something, or wasn't where he should have been. And he waddles like a Penguin because he's chubby, but that's it. He's got some scars on his face. There's no element of it. It's too... I know everything that wants to come out now, we want to make it real. Like, everything's got to be real. And we're getting away from the characters that were in some of the original Batmans and the colorful nature of some of them, or just the over-the-top character of the villains and stuff. And now it's got to be more gritty and real, and I get that. But to just turn the Penguin into some second-rate mobster looking to make his way to the top is, to me, stupid. But having said that, if you forget the nature of it being a supposed Batman villain, and that the idea that he's the Penguin is stupid, if you just watch it for the idea of a mobster making it, you know, trying to become powerful or whatever, the trailers for the HBO show Penguin actually look pretty good.
The big development here is that you appear to be one of the people who says Penguin, not Penguin.
I say Penguin instead of Penguin, I guess, yeah. I can say a Penguin. It's very close, though. I probably intertwine, I probably say both over and over again. But am I a Penguin person? I think I am.
It sounds like it, yeah.
No, I think I am. And you know, I got to get, we got to get Boyle in here and make fun of, did you see how he mispronounces a word? Did you see that on Twitter? I think DA had him on, or someone had him on. No, he was on with the morning show,
Maggie and Perloff.
Maggie and Perloff, I think that's what it was. And he said imbecile instead of imbecile. I've never heard someone say imbecile.
No, that's a weird one. I was lucky enough to be here for the craziest mispronunciation of all time.
What's that one?
I was producing the morning show the day Peter Schwartz said Takiya.
Oh, that's right.
And we all just kind of paused and looked at each other. First me and Gio, and he turned to look at Boomer. I looked at Eddie like, did we all just hear? And then Gio gave the... Wait a second.
Takiya, I remember that. I heard it. I didn't hear it live. I've heard it since. Yeah, Takiya. That's funny. But yeah, he says imbecile, and I say penguin instead of penguin. That's true.
You're not the only one.
No, I know. Yeah, I hear you.
It's interesting. I feel like it's usually Southerners do that, not people who've lived in and around New York their entire life.
Well, here we are. Penguin.
And I did find out which game it was. It was the Friday night game against the Red Sox, the home game where Clay blew it. That was when you tweeted about the Iron Claw.
Oh, yeah, when he gave up the home run to...
Yoshida.
Yoshida, yeah. Yep. That was more depressing than Iron Claw. That was the beginning of the bad stretch. That was at home. No, it started in Fenway. Oh, what a disaster. Red Sox to Red Sox. Thankfully, hopefully, that's over. 888-808-1019. Andre, please tell me the Yankees are back. Andre in the Bronx, you're on the Fan. What's up, bud?
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good, man. Hey, listen, right? Are you a Yankee fan?
I am, yes. Thanks for listening.
Okay, good. So listen, who can they bring up from the minor leagues, right? Because you know more about this than I do, even though I'm a big Yankee fan. Mm-hmm. Who can they bring up that's going to help them down the stretch? You know, because they're going to need some pitching. And if Aaron Boone is going to survive, he's going to have to start doing some Billy Martin kind of stuff, you know? And I'm telling you, if Billy Martin was alive today, I mean, he would just, if he could coach this Yankee team right here, this team would win a world championship, you know? And Aaron Boone is going to have to start taking some chances, and he's going to have to pull his pitchers, you know, because he stays too long with them. But who do you think can come up and help them? That's down on the minor league right now.
Really nobody. No, there's the pitching department, pitching department, starting pitching department.
Yes.
Nobody.
Yes.
Nobody. They don't have any. They don't have any real pitchers ready to come up. You're going to get what's his name back from injury. You're going to get Clark Schmidt back from injury. They've thrown Will Warren here. I you know, he threw that one game. You keep him in the rotation. Cody Petit is another name coming, you know, back from injury. But no, this is the team. This is the rotation. This is the pitching. Now you got Jason Dominguez to come and maybe play left field if Verdugo struggles again or continues to struggle. You could play him in the outfield or, you know, you bring him up. But that's about it. This is the Yankee team right here, right now.
But do you think he's going to do what he did for them last year? And then the other dude, Spencer Jones, would you bring him
no.
up?
I think no, he's not. He's not. He's in single A. He's playing in single A. He's been hot for like 2 weeks.
One of the three untouchable.
Yes, he's untouchable because what they hope he can be in maybe next year, maybe in the second half of next year, maybe. He's not coming up now from single A. Guys, wake up. This is the team, and enough. I will tell you that I find at least if Billy Martin was still alive, slightly more appealing than if only George Steinbrenner were alive, because at least it's different. But if Billy Martin were alive, he wouldn't be able to manage today because you get it's not just give me the roster and I'll do what I want. It's not how it works. Just enough with Billy Martin. What would Billy Martin do? Come in and slap guys around? Like, come on.
Get fired.
Yeah, get fired 18 times.
Even Hal and Cashman would fire Billy Martin.
That's true. Enough with what if Billy Martin. The old what if is the saddest thing we could do. I don't want to do the what ifs. Unfortunately, Billy Martin tragically passed away. Unfortunately, George Steinbrenner is no longer with us. They have nothing to do with this season. Nothing to do with this team. Nothing to do with Aaron Boone or Hal Steinbrenner. This team is good enough right now. I've said it before. I'll say it again. This team is presently constituted, is good enough to win the World Series. They don't need help from the minor leagues. They don't need anything. The guys coming back and the guys here are good enough to win the World Series. Will they? I have no idea. But they're good enough to. Please, watch. I know Baltimore won the last two games in Cleveland. Watch Baltimore play. Watch Baltimore drop pop-ups. Watch Baltimore, you know, allow themselves to give up a run on rundowns. They have played horrible. Adley Rutschman hasn't had a hit in 2 months. Like they are, and nobody gets on them, right? Nobody talks about, hey, the Yankees, this is an all-in year. I know the Orioles are young and that they expect to have this group for a while, but is this not a year to go out and win a championship for Baltimore? What'd they do? Where was their urgency to go out and make trades that make them that much better? Like, this Yankee team is as good as, and you can't tell me Cleveland's better because I'm gonna lose it on you. You call me up and tell me Cleveland's better. Because I've been talking about how good Cleveland is all year and I got laughed at. Laughed at. Oh, they beat Cleveland. Big whoop there in the Central. Cleveland sucks. Cleveland's a stepping stone to the ALCS. Cleveland's terrible. Don't call me up now and tell me the Yankees aren't as good as Cleveland. I don't want to hear it. I've been trying to tell you Cleveland's a good team. For 2 months, nobody wanted to tell me. Everyone wanted to laugh at me when I said, oh, you know, the Yankees did beat Cleveland. And not to say that the Yankees are great. Look, they beat Cleveland. But just to have a full conversation when we say the Yankees can't beat good teams, don't dismiss Cleveland, which everybody did. Oh, Cleveland sucks. Oh, and we also didn't care about the Astros, although they're right now right there for a division championship. So I guess those wins don't count either. Now I'm rehashing old arguments. My point is this team's as good as anyone. Look around the Major League Baseball. They have the most runs scored. They have the biggest run differential. Their offense is starting to come out of it. And they have two of the best hitters in all of baseball smack dab in the middle of their lineup. And come October, I'm hoping that'll make a difference. 888-808-1019. And that will be the difference between this year and the previous years that didn't get it done. When we come back, we'll talk a little Giants, a little feistiness, a little standing up to some of the haves in the NFL. It's amazing that the Lions are considered, it is crazy, but it's true. The Lions are considered one of the best teams in the NFL, Super Bowl contenders, and the New York Giants stepped right up and answered the call. Plus, did Hard Knocks, because I'm starting to think maybe it did Hard Knocks and the openness that the Giants had with Hard Knocks and the revelation of what they were trying to do with that first draft pick spark a little feistiness inside the quarterback.